As you get settled, I'll make some of the same preparatory remarks, Council. There are multiple podiums, but the one in the middle, I think, is the one that we're having the best success with hearing you. I think at the other podiums, as soon as you turned your head or backed away, the microphones cut out, and so we were hearing one word come through the speaker and the other words from a distance. So if you'd use the podium in the middle, I think that's better for us. And then before you begin, if you would state your name, but also help us to pronounce it properly and that of your client, and if there are any other preferences that you have about how to refer to you and your client, please let us know those as well. And as soon as you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Michael Puklich, and I represent the appellant in this matter. Sometimes I have difficulty saying my own last name, but that's the one they gave me. So, this case involves the payment of $343,000 that the respondent JMH paid to the city of Waconia. It's an appeal from the trial court's grant of summary judgment in this case. And I think that the core issue for this court is, what was the amount paid for? And the what was the amount paid for? The trial court made a determination that the amount was, I'm sorry, Your Honor, is that better? Is it coming through okay?
I can hear you.
Okay. It made the determination that the amount was paid for a pending or a levied special assessment, and then also made a determination that the trial court did not need to make a determination as to whether or not the special assessment could have been made or whether or not it was accurately made. We contend that that is specifically error in this case because the construction of the party's agreement has words in it that contain very specific language. It has the term special assessments. It has the term pending and levied. And it has the term fees and costs. All of those within the scope of the agreement itself mandate that those assessments, the fees and the costs, be legitimate. That is the underlying interpretation that we believe controls.
So if it's not a legitimate, the 400 or the 343,000 was not a legitimate or valid assessment, what was it? How do you describe the thing that the city claims it is entitled to?
Well, we get that answer, actually, Your Honor, from the affidavit of Stephen Henches, who is the owner of the plaintiff in this case. And at paragraph 4 of the affidavit that he submitted to the court in response to the summary judgment, he claims that the payment was as a precondition to the approval of the annexation of the real property into the city. What the payment was in this case, Your Honor, and just so the court has a...
Can it be both a pending or a levied on one hand and at the same time a precondition to annexation?
It could, certainly. Yeah, as long as it checked both those boxes. But it couldn't in this case because the statutory criteria for making the assessment wasn't followed. The cities exist only by statute, and they are required to follow procedures. They can't act outside of normal bounds. And in this case, the city, if they are going to assess a property, has to follow very specific statutory criteria, which they did not in this case.
Can I also follow up? Because I wasn't sure as I reviewed the briefs whether... the same arguments are being made with regard to the verb levied as they are with regard to the verbs identified or pending. Or said levied and identified and pending on the other hand, right? Are there different arguments being made? In other words, is it that on whether something is pending, there's a distinction at least between the city and the township? So maybe you can clarify for me if it's the same arguments on those.
Yeah,
or are they different?
I'll try to. The answer is it's basically the same because an assessment that's made, a city can only make assessments for property within its jurisdictional boundaries. The property at issue, the bulk of it in this case, was outside of the city of Waconia at the time. So the city of Waconia had no statutory basis to make an assessment. A, quote, pending assessment could be made in the event that the city, let's say, for example, constructs a road outside of its boundaries that benefits another township. There's a anticipation that at some point in time in the future, the township may be annexed. There's a specific statutory criteria under 429 that says that in that case, as long as you do X, Y, and Z as a city, you could, at some point in time in the future, come back and make an assessment, and it's pending then, so that it could make a condition as to the annexation.
And it seemed like the letter from the city's attorney was implying that the city was reserving the power to assess under that provision. Do you agree with that? That seems to be the footnote or the bookmark that's left by the city. And if that's correct, I couldn't tell from the record, since there wasn't any finding on the point, whether there had been prior notice. I mean, I know there's an assertion in your brief that, well, our client never got prior notice, the township was never informed, and those steps weren't taken. The district court didn't actually enter findings on that point, I don't think. And so what's the status of that legal theory that you've raised, that there's no basis in law for a retrospective assessment process?
I'll try to answer what I think is the question, and please stop me if I'm not getting it, Judge Ross. The city attorney, Attorney Melkert, sent us a letter saying that the municipality did not assess it. They removed the assessment from the three parcels that were within the city of Waconia, and then agreed that there was no right to assess it, but said that the city reserved its rights to essentially say, if you want to come into the city, you're going to have to pay this amount, which we contend that switches it to become the costs or a fee or a cost associated with the annexation, which JMH has to pay under the agreement, not us. So that's where the issue comes into play, and why I think Judge Wentzel, who's a great judge and a friend of mine, missed the point that he needed to at least make a factual finding on that matter. And if there was an ambiguity in the agreement, he needed to take into consideration
fact finding on whether that assessment was still in play, that
yes.
Process could still be in play.
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor, because the language is clear, and I think both parties agree to it. We both cited the applicable provisions within the purchase agreement. Both of those provisions contain very clear language that has very specific definitions.
Now, could parties agree, okay, we've got this statutory process to levy the assessment sort of retrospectively, but we'll just agree by contract. We'll call it an assessment. You waive your right to a hearing. You waive your right to contest it. You want this property to be part of the city. It increases the value to the property to your end buyer. Everybody's happy with it. Why can't that still be called an assessment? is that lawful? And if not, why not?
I guess it could be because the parties would be free to define terms as they wanted to within the agreement. But in this case, since they had no idea that would be the expanded definition of an assessment, which would be an inapplicable, unstatutory assessment by the city, there would be no reason for my client to apply a definition outside the plain and ordinary understanding of the term.
But the prior agreements with Plowshare and the others, didn't they use the assessment language in those agreements with the city or not?
Which is a point that I think got a little bit lost in all of this. My client was never, although some of his land seemed to have been encumbered by that agreement, he was never a party and never authorized anybody to enter into that agreement on their behalf.
Let's
so,
get into another point in the briefing. You didn't provide a reply brief, am I correct? I didn't.
Correct.
So there was these assertions in the respondent's brief that your client was a successor an interest to Plowshares and Syntex, and I wasn't sure whether that was a point that was conceded or whether that's just accepted by you that, I mean, Plowshares under these agreements with the city. If your client is, in fact, a successor in interest, it seems like perhaps your client is stuck with those agreements, whether or not they fit the statutory definition or not.
Well, I understand that. And no, we've never conceded that point. In fact, throughout the entire, and the district court didn't make any finding on that point either. So the that argument is, I don't know where it came from. There is no, we've consistently said throughout the throughout our answer, throughout all the briefing, that we never at any point in time entered into any agreement that authorized Plowshare or the Waterford development or somehow did it ourselves. Now, it arguably encumbered some of the property, but nobody knows how that happened. They haven't brought forth evidence to establish that somebody had authority to do that. The original party that went into the agreement, I think, went under and is no longer in existence. It got transferred to another entity, and then, as the court will note, and
well, what's the effect of it being recorded then? So it's these are, I mean, I understand you say, well, we didn't know about it. We weren't party to it. Our client didn't agree to encumber our property that belongs to us, but it's recorded. It's been recorded since, I don't know, from the early days of the roundabout development, as I understand it.
Right. It doesn't have the same impact, unless there's a case out there that I'm aware of, like adverse possession would be, where if you just simply start recording stuff against somebody's property, you're bound to and have a legal obligation to continue to research it. My clients had no idea that this was there or came up until initially after they signed the purchase agreement. So they signed it on September 15th of 2020. They got first notice of it on September 29 of 2020, approximately 2 weeks after they signed it. They got knowledge of the fact that there was or potentially something there. That's when the communications with the city attorney took place in connection with that. So in response to Your Honor's question, I don't know of any Minnesota law that says simply recording an instrument that may impact somebody's property, even if it's legally done, imposes an affirmative obligation on the party whose land is potentially impacted by it to go off and to do something. I don't think it operates like adverse possession or anything like that. In this case, there's just simply no evidence that anybody who entered into this agreement had the ability to bind the partnership to the agreement that's at issue in this case. It just doesn't exist.
Counsel, am I understanding your argument correctly that in order to determine who's responsible for the cost of the 400 plus under the terms of the purchase agreement, you need to resolve all these other issues about whether or not that assessment was lawfully levied, whether the city did anything wrong? Okay, and everybody was aware of this 400 plus recorded assessment before closing.
True.
Why didn't anybody attempt to sort this out before closing on the property? It seems like if people are saying the city did something wrong here, this isn't valid, no one should have to pay it, why didn't that get sorted out before you closed on the property?
In answering that question, let me tag on one friendly amendment. Why isn't the city an indispensable party in this litigation? But don't skip Judge Larkin's question.
I think they're related. In response to your question, Judge Larkin, there were discussions, and they were kind of incorporated in the respondent's brief, where there was discussions about closing. We said we weren't closing unless this got resolved. We weren't paying the fee. They wanted to withhold it and put it in an escrow. We said, no, if you do that, that's your risk. You pay it. It's up to you. This is our construction of the agreement. They decided to close on it then. We've got a...
pay the city on their own.
Yeah, and they didn't bring the city in. So the respondent decided to close on the matter without doing it. They did not bring the city in. Instead, they thought that they would take our chances with the Siegel family and go after them rather than pull the city in. We didn't have any standing on that issue because we had no intention of doing anything that we weren't contractually obligated to do. So the idea of us beginning the lawsuit on anything with the deck action would have probably faced some standing issues. The JMH was certainly in a position to do that, but chose not to for whatever reason. With respect as to whether or not they're an indispensable party, the answer to that question, I think, largely turns on how this court makes a determination as to whether I'm correct that the initial step is to really find out what was this payment for. And we, in order to do that, we need to look at whether or not the court's going to determine it's for
a... We know what it was for. We just don't know what it was. I mean, it seems to be clear that it was for the roundabout construction, I think. I thought that was undisputed.
Right. Yeah. No, you're correct, and I inartfully phrased that. I see I've got 1 second left, and I'll stop.
Can I, before I let you go, if I could prevail...
Sure. Go ahead, please.
...on the presiding judge for an additional question. I was at a loss. I mean, there seemed to be some missing parts to the puzzle. So we got this September 2020 assessment search that ascribes the entire $400,000 amount to the three city parcels.
Yes.
And then you have some communication from the city attorney saying, no, that's not right. We're not going to, there's no assessment against the city parcels.
Correct.
Then you have this assessment search in April of 2021 that ascribes the full amount to the three township parcels. What happened in between? I don't know what happened in between to justify the assessment.
There was nothing to justify the assessment, Your Honor. That's the point.
Proceeding or something that went on?
No. That's the whole point. The whole point of our argument was the city just can't do that, and you just can't take money from the Siegel family and say you have to pay that because the city is saying that in order to come in to the municipality, we're going to make you pay, regardless of whether you owe money or not. This is, in reality, an amount that was paid because the developer wanted to get the property into the city of Waconia. As Your Honor probably likely pointed out, it's not in the record, but it's true. It's worth more when it's in the city as opposed to in a township.
Oh, sure. You've got city sewer, water.
Absolutely. Municipal services, all of that stuff, and just the idea of being in a city. But that relates then to their application to get into the city. It doesn't have anything to do with an assessment that was invalid.
Does the city have the right to, I mean, maybe not under the assessment statute, but can the city say, well, we're not going to annex this property. We're just not going to do it. Somebody's got to pay for this $300,000 cost, and we're stuck with it, but our taxpayers shouldn't be. So if you want in, you have to pay. Is there anything that prevents the city from putting that obligation on JMH?
Nothing that I've found, unless there is a... I mean, there are certain...
As a matter of contract.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that there's anything that would put that on JMH or anybody else that wanted to bring... Because cities consistently, as long as they have a rational basis to justify whatever it is that they're asking for, and they have the lawful authority to do that, a municipality is free to say, if we're going to be taking on some additional property, particularly you see it if there's a bunch of housing and they're going to have extra police services and stuff like that, they may ask the developer, if you're going to bring something in like that, it's going to cost more money because the services are going to be expanded, so we're going to charge you something to come into the city. And that's really what this was.
All right. Thank you very much.
Dan.
May it please the court, my name is Anju Suresh from Henshaw & Culbertson, and I represent the respondent in this case, JMH Land Development Company, LLC. The district court decision should be affirmed because it correctly held that the $343,683 owed to the City of Waconia for the prior development of the subject real property was appellant's responsibility because it was a pending special assessment against the property.
Under what statute?
It's pursuant to the documents.
What do you mean pursuant to the documents? For a city to assess property, it has to have some statutory authority to do it. Under what statutory authority does the city assess these three properties, $300,000+?
So the special assessment showed up on the September 2020 special assessment search, and it had the authority to assess it pursuant to the documents, the developer's agreements, as well as the agreement regarding the cost.
What is there in the law that says a city can assess property, can issue an assessment against property based upon a contract that the city entered into with someone other than the property owner? What is the basis in law?
Under contract theory, Your Honor, it is my understanding.
So under contract theory, I could enter into a contract with the city that obliges you to be assessed, your property to be assessed, even though you're not party to that contract.
In this case, appellant was a successor in interest.
I saw that in
contract.
Your brief, but I never saw an explanation as to why that would be so. In what way? What is the interest that the Siegel family had that the contracting parties had as predecessors?
The parcels, which the developer's agreement, which covered those parcels, there were the appellant became a successor in interest through the limited warranty deed.
Explain that to me again. So. You're saying that one of the parties that contracted with the city to agree to these amounts owned the property that the Siegels now own?
Correct.
Who was that?
It was the Plowshares agreement. Plowshares and then
Centos. So Plowshares own those three parcels?
That is my understanding, correct.
Is there something in the record that would inform us that understanding is accurate?
It will be the developer's agreement, as well as the agreement regarding costs, and then subsequently
the developer's agreement wouldn't necessarily say who owns the property. That's an agreement between a landowner and a company that's coming in to make improvements. Perhaps purchase the property.
I think that's the only documentation in the record, Your Honor. I don't think there's any other documentation.
Let's assume there has to be some help me understand the gap between the September 2020 special assessment search, which places on the three city parcels the entire $400,000 assessment amount for the roundabout development, which occurred 15 years before then. And then you have a letter from the city attorney saying, no, city properties, they're not being assessed that amount. Then we have this April 2021 assessment of $343,000 against the township properties. What was the process that occurred in the city to support that transfer of an assessment from the city parcels, three city parcels, entirely onto three unrelated county parcels?
Well, in that letter from Mr. Attorney Melkert, he stated that he will be reserving his right to impose the assessment on the township parcels when it would be annexed.
So it's just the attorney saying, I have the right to do this. What's the statutory authority for the attorney to do that?
It would be, once again, under those contracts that were recorded against the property.
If I can ask a related question, which is the language in the contract is written, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, the purchase agreement, to say that if it's basically pending at the time of the agreement, right, or it has been levied or known identified at the time of the agreement. Is that right?
Correct.
And the agreement was in September of 2020 as well. Is that right?
Correct.
So does the change, the transfer from city to township, does that change, which postdates the contract, how does that affect the district court's determination that there's no fact issue regarding whether something is pending or was pending at the time of the purchase agreement?
I don't think it affects the decision. At the end of the day, the purchase and sale agreement talks about a known or identified assessment and or fewer costs related to the construction of any public improvements. That statement is unambiguous. It is a known or identified assessment and or fees or costs because it was discovered in the special assessment search. And
but
it is
related to only the parcels, and then it changes to different parcels.
Correct.
So does that change mean that there's a new charge, a charge that is now, or a new assessment that occurs after the purchase agreement was signed? And isn't there a fact dispute as to when that occurred and whether at the time of the purchase agreement there was anything pending or known related to the township parcels?
I don't think there is a fact dispute because the provision is broad enough that it could also be a fee and cost related to the construction of any public improvement. And the obligation, again, stems from the documents recorded from the property. So it does not matter whether or not, you know, there was a transfer of the assessment or the fee or cost to the township parcels. And the fees were also related to the construction of the public improvement, which is the roundabout.
15 you know, years earlier.
I'm sorry?
15 years earlier.
Correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, I might not be thinking about this correctly, and perhaps this is a better question for opposing counsel, but it seems to me a lot of what we're talking about, it seems like there was an assessment, it's been recorded, and what we're struggling with is whether or not it was a valid assessment. And if that's what we're struggling with, my next question is there anything in the purchase agreement that limits responsibilities for known assessments to valid assessments?
No, there is not, Your Honor.
And if not, who bears the risk of, well, here's an assessment, we know about it, it may not be valid, well, who bears the risk of its invalidity?
Sure. As the purchase and sale agreement states, the provision is quite broad. As the district court correctly held in its February 8, 2022 order, this case is just about the allocation of the responsibility.
Well, what is an invalid assessment? Is that even a thing? I mean, if the city attorney just enters numbers into a document and says, this is an assessment, and it's not, if the city hasn't followed the statutory steps to actually assess property, to levy an assessment against property, what is the thing that the city is asking for?
It could be a fee or a cost.
Well, you said it could be an invalid assessment, but if a contract says, if a purchase agreement says the seller or the buyer has to incur the cost of an assessment, if there's something out there that the city is claiming to be an assessment, but as a matter of law, it doesn't qualify as an assessment. I was troubled by the district court's analysis and the theory that you're asserting now that, well, even if it's an invalid assessment, it's still an assessment, simply because the city attorney wrote it into a document without any procedure, as far as we know. Unless you can inform us, was there any procedure done besides just the city attorney taking the $400,000 amount that was ascribed to three properties and changing it to a $300,000 amount and ascribing it to three totally different properties for the same project?
Okay, so under Section 7 and Section 16B of the Purchase and Sale Agreement, it is not limited to payments of valid or properly levied assessments under Chapter 429, but it also relates to fees and costs related to the construction of any public improvements. And, you know, the city does have contractual and equitable rights to collect the prior development assessment from the appellant. I think we're getting caught up on it, whether or not.
You said the city has a contractual right to collect from the appellant?
Once the parcels are going to be annexed to, once the township parcels are going to be annexed to the city.
I'm lost as to what contract you're referring to.
The developer's agreement, the agreement regarding costs.
The agreement that the Siegel family was not a party to.
They were not an identified party, but they were a successor in interest to those agreements.
I just want to make sure I'm getting my dates correct. So the language that we're talking about in assessments and the purchase agreement says on or before the closing date, and then later on it says, as you're talking about the fees and costs, prior to effective date. And I just want to make sure closing date, effective date, those are both prior to the change from assessments attached to the city, that then that changes and those become attached to the township parcels. Is that right? The effective date, the closing date for the purchase agreement?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? Could you please repeat your question, Your Honor?
Yeah, the language in the purchase agreement refers to a closing date. It also refers to an effective date. It's pretty clear that the assessments on or before the closing date is the way it begins. That paragraph ends with prior to effective date. So my question is, I just want to make sure I'm getting my dates right in the sequence. Closing date, effective date, is that before the change from the assessment that had been on city parcels, and then in April 2021, at some point between September 2020 and April 2021, that changes. So I thought that the closing date, the effective date, was September 15, 2020, but maybe I'm wrong about that. That's why I'm asking.
The closing date would be the day, the closing date would be obviously after after the assessment. And the effective date would be September 2020 when
the date they signed it.
Correct.
Okay.
And the fees or costs related to the development of the roundabout existed at that point in time. So based on the developer's agreement regarding costs, so that fees and costs were still in existence prior to the effective date.
Going back to the assessment search in April of 2021, I'll tell you what's especially troubling to me. You've got the three township parcels listed for the first time, and the balance due under the, quote, levied assessments, $343,000. But there are annotations underneath that that say, payable to city upon sale, due at closing on deferred special assessments, pleads the attached settlement agreement. So it doesn't appear that there was any actual special assessment process that the city undertook, but that it simply just attached a document and said, voila, these are now levied special assessments.
Right, and it was pending at that point in time.
I'm just trying to still get my mind around the lawful authority for the city to do that.
Again, it has contractual under the developer's agreements as well as the agreement regarding
costs. Well, let me go back. Where in the statute is the city authorized to do what it did on the contract theory that you're asserting? Is there some language in the statute? In your brief, you say the city had the right to assess the properties, and so I kept looking for a statutory reference, and I didn't see any statutory reference in your brief to support the theory, or any other legal, frankly, any case law or any other legal authority that says the city has a right to do this, to actually levy this $343,000 against the township properties.
As per Mr. Melker's letter to Mr. Neaton, both Plowshares and Centex, who were appellant's predecessors in interest, waived their rights to a hearing regarding the levy of a prior development assessment under Chapter 429. And also, Section 16B1, again, is unambiguous, and it does not talk about...
Into the contract again.
Correct, the purchase and sale agreement.
And if I could just ask you once, if you could, as clearly as you can, articulate why you believe the Siegel Family Partnership is a successor in interest in the way that you've described them in your brief. Give me the linear connection that makes them a successor at interest. And just to be clear, I didn't see a finding by the district court that they were successors at interest. I guess let's begin. Am I accurate that there's no finding by the district court that they are, the Siegel Family Group is a successor at interest?
Correct. The order does not address any such finding.
There's no finding. And so your assertion, this goes back, I'll just ask the question again, is based upon what exactly?
Section 1.04 of the developer's agreement, which encompasses real property, states that the agreement is binding upon the developer and its successors in interest. And the successors in interest include the owners of the real property, which is the appellant. And thus, the appellant is a party to the developer's agreement. And that is the first developer's agreement. Similarly, Section 1.04 of the second developer's agreement also states that the agreement is binding upon the developer and its successors in interest, in other words, the appellant.
When you say, in other words, the appellant, that's the part that I'm missing. So is there something, what is it that makes the successors, I understand that the document says it's binding upon the successors in interest. What is the bridge, then, between that document and your conclusion that the Siegel Family Group is a successor in interest?
That they're the owner of the real property of those parcels that the developer's agreement touches on.
And there's language in the developer's agreement that says that the owners of the property are successors in interest?
The documents run with the land.
I'm asking you a simple question. Mm-hmm. Is there something in the document that says that the owners of the property are successors in interest, that they're bound by the agreement of the developer? Or is that just an assumption you'd like us to make?
Because the documents are recorded against the property, it would run with the land, and therefore it would apply to the owners of the property.
And the legal authority for that is what?
That it's recorded against the property that the appellant's
currently on. That's your assertion. I'm wondering, what's the legal authority to support that? Is there a case, a statute that says, I've got a contract, I entered it with the city, I'm gonna record it in this property, and therefore it binds any property owner, even if the property owner wasn't a party to the contract?
The appellant had constructive notice of those documents, so they were on notice, so.
I have a question.
Yeah, we have one more question for you. Maybe more than one, I don't know, but at least one, how about that?
Very big picture, because what I'm struggling with here is the notion that everyone was aware of this, including JMH. JMH attempted to force payment on the Siegels before closing, was unsuccessful in doing that, went ahead and paid it and closed, and then turned around and tried to recoup from the Siegels. Why didn't you sort this out before closing? Why are we now post-closing looking to have a trial about whether or not this assessment was valid when you knew about it? I mean, I'm a little bothered by the notion that JMH closes this transaction having paid this assessment and now wants to reopen the whole can of worms. Can you not now go after the city and say, hey, this wasn't a valid assessment, we want to recoup from you?
It is Siegel Limited Partnership's responsibility to pay the assessment, and it's unambiguous and clear under the terms of the purchase and sale agreement, so we didn't see any reason to bring the city in as a party. And therefore, under the terms of the purchase and sale agreement, well, we elected to basically...
Let me ask this then, following up on some of Judge Ross's questions. I mean, are we to read into the purchase agreement sort of a presumption that any assessment referenced in that agreement is a valid assessment, all requirements were complied with by the city?
I don't think it needs to be read into it because it just broadly talks about assessment fee or cost and this.
And then I think what Judge Ross might have been getting at, I don't want to speak for him, is, well, is something an assessment if it was not procedurally proper? Can you still call it an assessment?
No, in which case it would fall under fees or costs related to the construction of the roundabout.
Got it.
Thank you. It's broad enough. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you very much.
I think I used most of my time already, but if the court has any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
I think you still have 5 minutes of time automatically. I am curious about your okay. response to the fees and costs argument.
Okay.
Let's assume for the sake of your rebuttal that there was no actual assessment. This was a creation of a city attorney on a document and just put it out there and called it a levied assessment. It pretty clearly is an attempt by the city to recoup its costs for the development of the roundabout.
It would need to be in that same way, going back to Your Honor's questions. And Judge Ross's point, there's no such thing as a invalid assessment that can be charged to somebody, the same way that there cannot be an invalid fee or cost that is associated with or charged by a city. And the city has...
Are there statutory provisions talking about how to recoup fees or costs?
Yes, there does, and they need to be very specifically followed. When this court asked the question about what statute it was, it's 429. And 429 provides a basis for a city to, because it can't assess, to recoup its costs and fees. And in order to do that, they have to follow a very strict statutory procedure.
Okay, so what you're saying is it doesn't matter whether you call it a fee or a cost or an assessment. If it's an assessment to recoup a fee or cost, it's an assessment.
Yes. And not only that, it needs to be valid. Otherwise, we open up the proverbial, anybody comes in and simply says, I did this for the land, and there's a never-ending, under their construction of the agreement, it wouldn't matter whether or not it was a valid fee or cost. It wouldn't matter whether it was a valid fee or assessment.
It seems like under their construction, seller's responsible to pay, therefore seller would be responsible to challenge the validity, right? Yeah. So it's not that it opens some Pandora's box. It places the responsibility on one party, and then they're required to challenge the validity as well.
And if that's the issue, then the parties to the agreement get to challenge it, and that's what we should have done at the trial court.
So are you saying under 429.025, the process for recouping costs for out-of-city, out-of-municipality improvements later, bringing them back in, that assessment process is, well, let me go back. The contract references fees and costs. It also separately references assessments. So I think the argument's being made that if they're separate things, even if the assessment is not appropriate under 429.052 or 071, it's still a cost. The city incurred a cost. And it now intends to ascribe that cost to the annexation process, and therefore it's something that the seller has to pay under the agreement.
If it gets subscribed to the annexation process, then I think it defaults to the application for annexation, because that's the only place in which the contract references those words. Then it's their obligation, not ours. So there is a little bit more meat to the agreement than just generalized fees and costs. It specifically has to be for the development of the property, and there is no finding.
Well, it says related to development of the property or construction of public improvements, including roadways, highways, blah, 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 blah. It also says whether or not, prior to the effective date. So as long as this cost is incurred prior to, but then it says whether or not then due or assessed. So it seems to hold open the possibility that there could be a cost related to development or construction of, say, a roadway or a roundabout, not yet due, not yet assessed, that seller shall pay.
Well, that it has to be in one point, Your Honor, that sentence where you said blah, 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 does end with a conjunction at the very end of it, with the conjunction prior to the last phrase has a conjunction and development of the property. So the
you're saying that the development of the property prior to effective date, whether or not then due or assessed, does not apply if it's for the purpose, a cost related to construction of a public improvement. It's only a cost related to the development of the property itself, not some roadway to it.
No, I understand what you're saying. And
I'm asking if that's what you're saying.
The answer is no. That is not what I'm saying, because it's not, that wouldn't be accurate. The answer is that it needs to be under any type of a construction. It needs to be either a valid assessment or a valid fee and cost. The city has very limited ability to do either one of them. In this case, it doesn't fall within either one of those, so it's invalid.
The timing isn't that important. It's the validity that's what we look to, not the sequence of the dates that I'm focused on.
Honestly, I never thought about the court's question until you raised it, but it's a very good one. And I think it probably does, because it flips everything. If the assessment is just on the three parcels of the property, and that is prior to the effective date, and then it's nothing after the effective date until it shows up later, that changes everything. And I didn't think about it. But yes, I think that question that the court raised completely changes the scenario in the appellant's favor. But I can't tell the court that was made. It just didn't.
And your view is that even if the city calls something a cost for a roadway that was developed 15 years earlier, that's not a cost that it can, under the contract, that it can rightly assign to the seller, except for statutory authoritative framework.
There could possibly be a contractual basis for the city to do it. It needs a hook, though. It needs a legal hook, either statutory or contractual. That there are some limits on what a city can do, but in this case, we have neither. We don't have the contractual obligation that pushes that back onto the Siegel family, and we don't have any of the statutory framework that was followed. I think everybody in this room knows what happened. They wanted to get their property into the city of Waconia, so they paid for it.
They being the developer.
Yes.
Once.
Right. I see my time is up. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both very much.